Welcome to the Daily Wrap-Up, a concise show dedicated to bringing you the most relevant independent news as we see it from the last 24 hours.
So, wow, for those of you that just tried to tune in for the three attempts in a row to actually live stream this edition of the Daily Wrap-Up, you're probably quite frustrated, because I'm quite frustrated as well. Three times in a row, the stream was just shut down, went to zero, delete, gone, immediate. You know, of course, it's probably just a glitch, as they always say. Anyway, I'm going to make sure and record this for you guys and get it out there nonetheless. Old school, like I used to do, but quite shocking to see it happen like that with the high-speed internet that I have here. It's a little interesting. Anyway, I want to start the show out today by discussing something that a lot of people seem to be kind of freaking out about, which is the fact that we recently put a new show on our YouTube channel called Unraveling Political Theory. It is a new slash old show that's been on there before, hosted by Tim Bryant and Keith Preston of AttackTheSystem.com. Now, Tim was one of the first couple people that I brought on with the website after I founded it. Him and Anthony Tyler are two of the first people that I brought to, you know, help work with the website, write content, all kinds of things. And actually, as we continue to grow, he, in my opinion, is easily one of the most pivotal people involved in helping direct the direction to where we are today. And I greatly respect Tim Bryant. And he took a leave of absence. He was gone for quite a long time. He just decided to finally come back and begin doing this show again. Now, it's important people understand that I'm not going anywhere. People are like, where's Ryan? What happened? I'm not leaving. Nothing is going to scare me or shake me away from doing this 5 days a week, the Daily Wrap-Up, and whatever other shows I sneak in there in between, no matter what. I'm not going anywhere, so understand that. His show is going to be airing likely once a week. You know, there's people that seem to not like the content or disagree with what he's saying, and that's okay. Right? If you understand this show, that's what it's all about. Now, he may say things that I don't agree with. He may say things that I may have a different opinion about. Keith might say things that I don't agree with or I have a different opinion about. And that's okay. I respect both of them immensely. And I believe that their intent is correct. I think that they have good intent for what they're trying to talk about. And they just may see things a different way. We also agree on a lot of stuff. The point being, if you are that disturbed by the fact that somebody else is on this channel saying something that you don't wholly agree with, then maybe you're missing a little bit of the point of what I'm saying on this show every day, which is the fact that it's okay for us to have different opinions, even in the same outlet. Just, you know, if it's something you disagree with that strongly, you don't have to watch it. You can come watch me every week, and there's going to come a time when I say something that you don't agree with. And we have to understand that it's okay to share different opinions. As long as we can recognize that we're all striving for the truth and that we can challenge each other's opinions with facts and discuss things. And sometimes we come to agreements and go, oh, you know, I was right, you were wrong, or vice versa. And that's how it has to go. It's very important to understand that. So please don't get upset. Don't freak out about the fact that there's a new channel or a new show going on. As this grows, we're going to see more of that. But never fear, I am not going anywhere. This show will still be airing 5 days a week. Just to put that out there, because I saw a lot of people, new and old fans, kind of freaking out about the change. So I apologize for no notice. It was kind of a spur of the moment thing. So let's get into the content today. I want to begin with a quote, something that I find to be very relevant to what we're going to get into today. And the quote is, "Majority rule only works if you're also considering individual rights, because you can't have five wolves and one sheep voting on what to have for supper." And that's Larry Flint. To make another point, interestingly, from a past show, I recently quoted Emma Goldman, and some people got upset because she said they have opinions about Emma Goldman. I don't agree with almost everything that Larry Flint has to say. That doesn't make the words he says there any less true. Quoting someone doesn't necessarily mean you support them. That's an important thing to understand as well. And those words are profoundly accurate to what we're talking about today. Now, as the elite continue to consolidate their control of politics and media, despite the majority of Americans who now see mainstream media for what it is, by many different polls you could point out, we find ourselves in a very precarious time. One in which choices must be made that stand to shift the very foundation on which most so comfortably sit in their apathetic stupor. However, it's not their fault. As I point out often, we were all there at one point. They have been taught that by passively relinquishing their rights for state protection that is essentially non-existent, that this apathy is honorable, even patriotic. It's time to take that uncomfortable step into the scrutinizing light of the false majority and realize that you're not alone. You must break past this false perception designed to scare you into silence and isolation and see that we, that you, are the majority today. Now today, the totalitarian tiptoe, as it's called, is fully underway, as it seems that every step made is carefully calculated and measured against the public reaction by the Mockingbird media testing the waters. Americans saw an example of this with the wildly unnecessary and wholly ineffective MOAB in Afghanistan. They saw this with the false flag chemical attack in Douma and the subsequent airstrikes on an airstrip that served no real purpose. These actions were designed, as I see it, to primarily do two things. First, to test the water, that is American public opinion, and see how the people would react to the U.S. bombing a country with which it was not currently at war, and attacking a country based solely on wildly unconfirmed intel. I would say false intel as we know it today. Clearly, they got the answer they were looking for. And second, conditioning the American people to a state of perpetual war, ironically, while refusing to declare it as such. The latter has been entirely orchestrated and an ongoing effort in this country since 9/11. There are adolescents in this country today that have lived their entire lives under a flag of war, or rather a flag of conflict, as the U.S. has not declared war officially since World War II, despite being embroiled in one conflict or another since that time. Even as civilians die and bombs are dropped at unprecedented levels today, the U.S. claims to be defending itself, oddly always on a sovereign nation's soil, as it were. This is yet another display of Orwellian deception. It's all one big shell game of misdirection designed to get you to look at anything other than the topics we'll be discussing today, and many of the topics we discuss on this show every day. Now, for the first one of the day, this one coming from RT, directly relating to something we've been talking a lot about, following up on stories we covered the last few shows. Very important step, because a lot of people have been wondering how they were going to react and basically calling them out for not reacting at all. But there's a lot to this. And this one entitled, Russia to supply S-300s to Syria within 2 weeks after the Iliad 20 downing during Israeli raid, according to the Ministry of Defense. So within 2 weeks, Russia will, as they claim, complete the delivery to Damascus of an S-300 air defense system previously suspended on a request by Israel, point of fact, as part of a response to the downing of a Russian plane amid an Israeli air raid on Syria. The defense minister, Sergei Shoigu, said early on Monday, quote, a modern S-300 air defense missile system will be supplied to the Syrian armed forces within 2 weeks. It is capable of intercepting air assault weapons at a distance of more than 250 kilometers and hits simultaneously several air targets, end quote. Now, significantly here, Syria's system will be integrated with Russian systems via the S-300 in order to prevent instances of, they call, blind firing, as we saw, or failure to have friend or foe identification capabilities. This also means that Russia will be directly involved in responding to any air incursion, rather than just backing up Syria or protecting the narrow areas where Russian installations and personnel are. This was actually brought to my attention by one of our followers, someone who I'm not sure if he wants me to mention his name, but I truly appreciate the information being sent. Now they go on to say, quote, the command post of Syrian air defense forces and units will be equipped with automated control systems that only supply to the Russian armed forces. This will facilitate centralized control over all forces and resources of the Syrian air defense, monitor the situation in the air, and ensure operative assurance of orders. Now, really take a moment and understand how profound that is. Now, people have been questioning whether Russia, or Putin specifically, his lack of a response, as it were, was a show of weakness. But it's clear, as I see it, that they were hoping to see him irrationally react. And it's clearly what he's doing now is essentially giving them the systems that will help them fight, or, you know, really be able to take down planes even from before they're able to take off, interestingly, But that they're combining their forces defensively. So now it's essentially Russia on the ground. This is a very big step. And he did so without having to actually draw any like world ire for taking an aggressive action, which some see as weakness. But in the grand chess game of everything we're seeing, he had very few options. First, understanding that his military is dramatically smaller than that of the United States and Israel combined, just the United States by itself. But that this is a way to essentially be, if from now on, if they attack Syria, they'll be attacking Russia. And they may still will, but this is a very big development, and it puts more control in Putin's hands. And maybe that was the point all along. Now, Israel has long claimed to be acting primarily against Iran inside of Syria, using that to basically justify any kind of action it takes, often firing from over neutral Lebanese airspace. But additional new electronic countermeasures to be erected along with the S-300 system will hinder this. Now, per RT, it says, quote, the third measure announced by the Russian Defense Ministry is a blanket of electronic countermeasures over Syrian coastline, which could, quote, suppress satellite navigation, onboard radar systems, and communications of warplanes attacking targets on Syrian territory. Shoigu said the measures are meant to cool down hotheads and prevent misjudged actions, posing a risk to our service members. He added that if such a development fails to materialize, the Russian military would, quote, act in accordance to the situation. This is indeed a very, very big development. And we have to understand that this, in a way, as I see it, many will disagree, this was a very, very smart move by Putin to not overreact to the situation, which would simply allow them the excuse they need to do everything they're trying to accomplish in Syria. It takes a lot more courage than you may think and intelligence to not emotionally react to a situation. And clearly he's coming out ahead in all this. I mean, as we talked about in Syria, he's winning in Syria. Syria and Russia are effectively taking back Syria from the United States, Turkey, Israel, everybody, ISIS, all of them kind of together, as I see it, working to take Syria away from the Assad government. And this is a big development to see him now not only give them weapons that will be able to, so they will be able to target Israeli planes well before they get there. As I understand it, literally, even as they're taking off from where they would take off from, that's a pretty big deal, but also intertwine their defense systems on the ground. You have to understand the relevance of that. Now, interestingly, and not surprisingly, Bolton responded to this almost immediately. This one coming from Zero Hedge. Bolton warns Russian missile sale to Syria would be significant escalation, which is just ridiculous when you understand that a significant escalation is arming themselves, giving them the ability to defend themselves. No, a significant escalation is the illegal invasion and occupation of a sovereign country. That's a significant escalation. But of course, this is their way of labeling it something. So now if they're basically saying, if you do this, that's enough for us. We've been looking for an excuse, and if you do that one thing, that's it, then we're doing it. You know, like that's what they're trying to label anything. That's when they started out saying a chemical attack, a weapons attack, we need to respond. And then Russia played it well, so they didn't have the necessary context to carry it out, which would have been the invasion of Idlib, and you saw the demilitarized zone. So then they said, oh, well, any attack then we're going to do something. And so now clearly we're seeing this development, and now they're just trying to say, well, if you give them some weapons, then yeah, something's going to happen. And it's very, very easy to see how this is developing. So U.S. National Security Advisor John Bolton said on Monday that the Russian plans to supply Syria with an S-300 missile system would be a significant escalation by Moscow, interestingly. Of course, obviously they're the ones bringing it in, but pointing at Russia, as you know, we should be expecting by now, and hopes it will reconsider. His statements follow the Russian announcement from early Monday that Russia will supply the surface-to-air missile system to Syria in 2 weeks, 1 week after Moscow blamed Israel directly for causing the downing of the Russian military plane in Syria, despite strong Israeli objections, which doesn't really mean much, seeing as how they've blatantly lied about almost everything they've done. And then we find out later that they did, even though they just realized or just admitted that they carried out over 200 attacks in the recent history. So the Russian military said earlier in the day that it will supply the surface-to-air missile system to Syria in 2 weeks, despite these objections, which we already pointed out. The move came a week after Moscow blamed Israel for indirectly causing this downing of the plane. Now, this is what it all comes back to. U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo told reporters on Monday that he will meet with Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov during the United Nations General Assembly in New York this week, which is likely going to be a very eventful thing. But the reason I bring that part up again is because interestingly enough, in case you had any doubts about the fact that that is what caused this and the fact that Israel did indeed make this happen, Russia just released radar information that shows that they did, in fact, they confirmed that Israel F-16s hid behind the Iliad 20 off the Syrian coast. Exactly what they're claiming. As I just interestingly pointed out, that Israel lies and they find out they did it anyway. This is an important thing to understand. That this radar, of course, and you could claim that this is manipulated like anything could be, but it's just how many times they're going to continue to give us evidence while the other side gives us absolutely nothing but words and claims from career liars. Are we going to begin to see that they're likely telling us the truth? But as always, question everything. But the point is, this radar data confirms that the Israeli F-16s intentionally hid behind the Iliad 20 plane of the Russian plane, so it would be shot down, killing 15 Russians. Interesting, right? I mean, it's interesting to see that is clear evidence. It may not be proof in your eyes. Absolutely clear evidence. Something we seem to be confusing today. But with all of that said, it's important to see how this has developed, who's really at fault, and how, in a large way, Russia seems to be coming ahead, where they're now involved even further in Syria with giving them more intense defense systems. It seems like, in a large way, he's coming out ahead of all of this and really upsetting the United States and Israel predominantly. Now, for the next story coming from RT, of course, as if to hear all of what we're talking about and just come out with even more to show us that we're justified in our concerns about U.S. policy and Israeli policy in Syria, Bolton literally just came out and said, we're going to stay in Syria so long as Iranians are there. Well, that's interesting. That seems to be yet again a pivot from what we've been hearing, even though they continue to say, oh, the Iranians are the worst people in the world and they're carrying out terrorism everywhere and making nuclear bombs, even though there's evidence of none of that. Interesting to see this development. So as I see it, after everything we just talked about, all of that leads to where we are now. And we get like the evolution of all of it, the fake civil war, which is really an invasion into Syria, the fake protest and all the things they're doing everywhere else, in Venezuela and Iran and everywhere, to carry out exactly what we're talking about, leading to this, and now the false flag chemical attacks that we've disproven time and time again, leading to this very next one we knew they were about to carry out. And smartly enough, he worked with Turkey and created a demilitarized zone, which some think there's reasons for the pipeline idea there going right through that same area. That's to be discussed in future shows. That's a possibility. Nonetheless, what it did is it removed what they needed to carry out that false flag. Then they said, oh, okay, well, Israel attack them. Well, hopefully they'll respond and we can use it as an excuse. And they didn't. So now as I see it, their ploy just simply didn't work. They're not getting what they want from Putin. As far as I see it, very clearly, Russia just simply didn't take the bait. So now they're doubling down and maybe exposing their hand. And we know they very clearly want Iran. But as Caitlin pointed out in the past, Caitlin Johnstone, my head is spinning by how many times they continue to change this. Oh, we're there to fight Assad because he's killing people. No, we're there to fight ISIS. No, we're there to, you know, it's just on and on and on. And now it's about Iran. It can't be all of them simultaneously. I guess it can be all of them simultaneously. But it's absurd to think that they claim wholeheartedly that the only reason we're there is to fight ISIS, which Trump has said numerous times. And Assad is just a side thing. Oh, well, while we're here, we'll fight Assad too because he's killing people. Now, clearly, regardless of anything else, they defeat ISIS, they overthrow Assad. He's point blank saying that we're here until we remove Iran. And that is very revealing. Very revealing that that's likely what it's been all along. And especially how it calls out the interests of Saudi Arabia and Israel standing behind them. So U.S. forces will, as they claim, remain in Syria so long as any Iranian-related forces operate there. The Trump administration has openly declared this. Syria invited Iran to help fight jihadist rebels in ISIS while denouncing the U.S. presence as illegal, because it is. And we made this same claim. Jake Morfonios recently pointed this out in Iraq, that they say the same thing about Iranian forces in Iraq. But the reality is that they're welcomed there to fight off the very actual extremists that the U.S. and the CIA groups have created there and used to foment the unrest they use as justification. So who's the real bad guy here? As we see it, with the information we have in front of us, it seems really clearly that Iran is simply trying to fight against this extremist element that's being put there by the United States and its proxy factions and its allies. It seems very clear. There's possibly something I'm missing here, but the reality as I see it is that they're pinning them as the bad guy because they're fighting their proxy forces. We've shown time and time again the U.S. connection, the Israeli connection to these ISIS forces, funding, arming, protecting them. So it seems pretty damn clear what's happening here. And now they're saying, well, as long as Iran's here, then that's our justification, just kind of pivoting to Iran. Very revealing. They literally said, quote, "We're not going to leave as long as Iranian troops are outside Iranian borders." And that includes Iranian proxies and militias, according to John Bolton, he said at the UN General Assembly session in New York, which is again, just simply saying whoever we claim is. They can just simply say, well, those guys are working for Iran, so we need to be there. These flimsy, just broad-stroked ideas, just like we talked about with the War Powers Act, how they can simply just say, ISIS is there, so we're able to invade that country. Who cares about international law? It's very much the same thing. He also blamed Iran for, quote, the attacks in Syria and Lebanon, which is crazy, and said it was, quote, really the party responsible for the shooting down of the Russian plane. Now it's Iran's fault that Israel manipulated the situation and caused the Syrian S-200s to shoot the plane down. No matter how you look at the situation, how is that Iran's fault? You see the ridiculousness of the mentality here. It's Iran's fault just because they're focused on Iran. That's what it comes down to. Except that Mattis just said, quote, "We are in Syria right now to defeat ISIS. And destroy the geographic caliphate and make sure it doesn't come back the moment we turn our backs." Of course, the groups that we know that they funded, trained, protected. Anyway, he just said this at the Pentagon on Monday, adding that the U.S. will not expose Syrians it freed from IS to a brittle military pullout. They freed, which is, you know, the truth on the ground from any number of people. People from all sides have very clearly shown that every single time they remove the U.S.-backed, the Israeli-backed extremists, the civilians flood back in under Assad control, cheering and celebrating, even though they give you something much different on the bought and paid for mainstream media because they're lying to you. But it's very revealing to say that they freed these Syrians. It's just all one big propaganda game. And it's frustrating to see because the evidence is very, very clear. Now, as the author notes, Bolton's statement moves the goalposts, as I pointed out a moment ago, previously established by his boss. President Donald Trump has repeatedly stated that U.S. troops are in Syria to eradicate the Islamic State and would leave after that mission is complete. Not a surprise that they just changed what they said before. That's U.S. That's customary for United States politicians, or any politicians for that matter. But the fact that he's still kind of holding to that, it kind of shows you again who's really making these policies. It seems like John Bolton and people in this circle. Now, while Trump has publicly advocated for less U.S. military involvement around the world, which is laughable today, his foreign policy team, from Bolton to Mike Pompeo to Nikki Haley, have embraced the continuing, ongoing style of U.S. foreign policy, demanding regime change in Damascus, as well as Tehran, as well as many other places, on and on and on. As absurdly, we just did this fun little remix of Nikki Haley, point blank saying that we don't want regime change in Iran. We don't want to do regime change anywhere, which I seem saying do regime change seems really, that doesn't seem like proper grammar to me. That's just me. But clearly they're lying to you. And it's about time. It's about damn time that we notice that, for those that may be new to this information. Regime change is, it's a running list of countries. Probably, I think it's more than 40 countries. I have to have the list up. I'll have it in the show notes for sure, of countries that the United States has been directly involved with, even many well past Donald Trump's election. So Nikki Haley saying that is a blatant lie. And they know that. They're hoping you don't realize it. Moving on to the final story of the day, this one coming from antimedia.com, and a very big story. Domestic policy, something that is near and dear to my heart. And this story is shocking. Thank you to Antimedia for making this. They put this out today. And truly, this story is alarming to me because it really highlights the true nature of our police force and really those controlling them behind the scenes and the profit motive behind it all. This one entitled, "Marijuana Arrests Spike Outpace Arrests for All Violent Crimes Combined." That is not sensationalist, my friends. That is real. Outpace arrests for all violent crimes combined. That is alarming. For the second year in a row, arrests for cannabis in the United States have gone up. also dwarfing the number of arrests for violent crime. The increases have come in the form of arrests for possession, mind you, not manufacturing and sales. According to the FBI's annual Uniform Crime Report, out of 1,632,921 arrests for drug abuse violations, 36.7% were for simple possession of cannabis. That amounts to 599,282 people, which is up from the previous year's figure of 587,516. In contrast, as Forbes noted, arrests for the sale of manufacture of the plant dropped from 65,734 in 2016 to 60,418 in 2017. Considering the drop in arrests for the sale and manufacture of cannabis, it's apparent that the increase in arrests for weed is due to possession offenses. And as I see it, when their revenue coming in from those types of arrests just disappeared due to legalization, they just went to a lower rung. Think about that. It's largely about the money. As we talked about civil asset forfeiture in our past show, this is literally what we're talking about here. That because, and understand too, that we're talking about legalization, majority in our democracy in this country, vast majority do not agree with this. And as we see legalization rise, as they lose this cash cow revenue stream coming from the arrest of these, they just went to the lower rung and said, shoot, we'll just start arresting you for having that plant in your pocket. Make sure we keep the money flowing. Because if you don't understand what civil asset forfeiture is, look it up. If they arrest you with cannabis, they can seize your car. And legally, they can keep it, even though it's not moral or right. There's literally laws in place where they can do that. If they pull you over on the highway with $10,000 in your pocket, they can literally take it from you and say, we think you're going to use this for a crime. Literally, just like that has happened. As I pointed out before, people driving on the freeway with, I think it was like $15,000 to $20,000 about to go open a church, had the paperwork for the church and everything. And the cops took their money. They never got it back because of a taillight that was out. They claimed they were going to use it for something, even though they literally had the paperwork showing they were going to open a church. It's ongoing. There's 100 examples like this. And we see very clearly the simple possession arrests are climbing because they're losing other ways to arrest for cannabis. It's despicable, but it shows you where the interest is. And even worse than that, when we get into the real reality, that they're doing this in place of actual crime. Now, in total, just under 91% of cannabis arrests were for possession. Think about that. Just possession. Even if you hated cannabis, you can acknowledge that they're going after the wrong people. The real people selling the drugs you should be going after. That's not what I think. But if you did think this was the right thing to do, you can acknowledge even that they're going after the wrong people. Now, Forbes calculated that according to the figures, a cannabis bust occurred every 48 seconds in the United States last year. Every 48 seconds. That is staggering. Now, meanwhile, arrests for violent crime in 2017 reached 518,617, a figure 21% lower than total cannabis arrests. Though numerous states have legalized cannabis, the federal government continues to classify it as a dangerous drug. Now, first, we got to point out that just because that's going down, it doesn't mean it's only because they're only going after cannabis. It's important to point that out. It could simply just be that violent crime is going down. But I don't think that's the case. And I've got some stats in a second to show you that that's not the case. But I have to point out that that's possible. Just for full disclosure, to make sure you understand that I'm not giving you some biased information. It's possible they just simply had less people to arrest for these violent crimes. But there's many reasons to show that that's not the case. First, Justin Skrikal, a political director for Normal, which is a cannabis activism group, said, quote, actions by law enforcement run counter to both public support and basic morality. In a day and age when 20% of the population lives in states which have legalized, and nearly every state has some legal protections for medical cannabis, at nearly every state, or its extract, by the way, the time for lawmakers to end this senseless and cruel prohibition that ruins lives, or it's time. And I completely agree with him. And you know what? The vast majority of Americans do too. But it shows you how much they really care about what you actually think. Now, I wrote this in 2016. I recently talked about it in the show when I was talking about civil asset forfeiture, which you should recommend you check out. But in 2016, or rather to into 2017, while law enforcement was busy making nearly 750,000 marijuana arrests, more than 35% of the nation's murders went unsolved. The clearance rate for rape was less than 40%. the robbery and property crimes were below 30%. Now, this is the enforcement and clearance rate, regardless of how many it was. Yet you understand the difference there? That they were less than 40% on rape while they were arresting anyone they could for cannabis. This means that more than half of all thieves and rapists in this country essentially got away with it and are still roaming the streets today, ready to get away with it again. In the government's fervor to arrest all those in possession of a small amount of cannabis, a little bit of plant in their pocket, in order to keep the streets safe from this obvious detriment to society, I guess they decided to let the little things fall by the wayside. Robbery, murder, and rape. Like, really take that in for a moment. And there's many more aspects that you could research to realize that it's not just simply that these are going down and these are going up. This is a clear and a clear exchange. They're focusing on the cannabis because it's profitable. And the moment that you give anyone a profit motive, take a guess at what they're going to do. And that's exactly what civil asset forfeiture does. That's exactly what cannabis does for police stations. Many people have talked about this. I highly recommend you do your own research and dive into this for yourself. Now, I wanted to talk quickly about an article. It's a lot of information in this article that I wanted to point out to you that it's you should read it for yourself. It's from Zero Hedge. I'll have the link in the show notes. But I really just wanted to read you one quote from it before I end today. And the title is The Living Reality of Military Economic Fascism Exposed. And there's a lot of information in this article. But the real point is the reality of our political system, the bribery that takes place, and how that involved with the military is ruining this country. It starts out with a quote that says, "The business of buying weapons that takes place in the Pentagon is a corrupt business, ethically and morally corrupt from top to bottom. The process is dominated by advocacy with few, if any, checks and balances. Most people in power like this system of doing business and do not want to change it." Colonel James G. Burton, 1993. Colonel James G. Burton just said that. Now, it's important to understand that. And then goes on to say this important part that I wanted to read. In countries such as the United States, those economies are commonly, though inaccurately, described as capitalist or free market. War and preparation for war systematically corrupt both parties to the state-private transactions by which the government obtains the bulk of its military goods and services. On one side, business interests seek to bend the state's decisions in their favor by corrupting official decision makers with outright and de facto bribes. The former include cash, gifts in kind, loans, entertainment, transportation, lodging, prostitute services, inside information about personal investment opportunities, overly generous speaking fees, and promises of future employment or consulting patronage for officials or their family members, which all of which is easily verifiable. Whereas the latter include campaign contributions, sometimes legal, sometimes illegal, sponsorship of political fundraising events, and donations to charities or other causes favored by the relevant government officials. Just understand the general concept of lobbying is bribery. Legalized bribery. That's literally what it is. And the article goes on to make the really clear point that all of this being the normal today, that it literally, and the one that really stood out to me, were not only just speaking fees, but inside information about personal investment opportunities and promises of future employment. The revolving door system. Here's a tip about something that's going to blow up tomorrow. I mean, literally and figuratively, I mean like a stock, but you know, 9/11. But the reality of saying, look, we have this inside tip about something that's going to get really, you know, make a lot of money, which is against the law, by the way. And they give these politicians something. And so then they're actually complicit with a crime and they can hold them accountable. But they also make money and it goes back and forth. They pass a law for them. They give them a job on their board when they get out of politics and vice versa. This is how our political system truly works. And it's so easy to see. And the reality they make in this, or the point they make, is that this in regard to the military and how the military lobbyists and munitions companies and contractors overseas have infiltrated everything and bribing people, manipulating people, and making it all work in their favor. Literally the military-industrial complex on steroids happening right in front of us, right in our political spectrum. And many don't even want to see it. It's just, it's so incredibly profound. And it's something that I really hope we can begin to pay attention to. So at the end today, I wanted to do something that was Caitlin Johnstone wrote an article on the 20th that I really just thought just hit it on the head. And this last section about the article was entitled Trump's opposition supports all his evil agendas while attacking fake nonsense, which we talked about before, I believe. But this last section really stood out to me as I read it a second time. And the reality that we are all blinded by this political show going on in front of us, this propaganda that I talk about all the time. And it is so very important that we begin to realize that we think we're in the driver's seat. We think we can check a box every 4 years or every 2 years and we're making a difference. But the reality is that it's all created. It's all this fake show for us to make us think that we're in control. So in John Steinbeck's The Pearl, there are jewelry buyers set up around a fishing community. It's a book, by the way, in case you didn't catch that, which are all owned by the same plutocrat in this book. But they all pretend to be in competition with one another. When the story's protagonist discovers an enormous and valuable pearl and goes to sell it, they all gather around and individually bid far less than it's worth in order to trick him into giving it away for almost nothing. U.S. politics is pretty much the same. Two mainstream parties, owned by the same political class, engaged in a staged bidding war for votes to give the illusion of competition. In reality, the U.S. political system is like the unplugged video game remote that kids give their baby brother so he stops whining that he wants a turn to play. No matter who they vote for, they get an Orwellian warmongering government which exists solely to advance the agendas of a plutocratic class which has no loyalty to any nation. The only difference is sometimes that government is pretending to care about women and minorities, and sometimes pretending to care about white men. In reality, all the jewelers work for the same plutocrat. And that video game remote won't impact the outcome of the game, no matter how many times you push the buttons. The only way to affect real change is to stop playing along with the rigged system and start waking people up to the lies. As long as Americans believe that the mass media are telling them the truth about their country and their partisan votes are going somewhere useful, the populace, whose numbers should give it immense influence, is nullified and sedated into a passive ride toward war, ecocide, and oppression. If enough of us keep throwing sand in the gears of the lie factory, we can wake the masses up from the oligarchic lullaby they're being sung. And then maybe we'll be big enough to have a shot at grabbing one of the real video game controllers. Let that sink in. Thank you for tuning in today. Make sure you check out all the independent sources in the show notes below. And if you'd like to check out one of our t-shirts, help support this channel. We have the new shirts that we're now selling. They're called Question Everything t-shirts on truthclothing.io. You can buy a t-shirt, help us out. You can buy anything else on this site as well using the promo code Vagabond. Help support independent media and just get out there and support any independent media that you believe in. It's important to support those that you think are trying to change something, whether that be me or any other person out there. But be a part of that change, as cliche as you may think that is. And always question everything. Come to your own conclusions. Stay vigilant.